5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
Where? The all-new Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, 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 good evening, one and all. It is the new Panic Room, episode 256 on the, good God, 2nd of December. What happened? I think it was January just 2 minutes ago. What happened to the year? So it shocked me a little bit and it means that in 23 days it is fucking Christmas. Hurrah, hurrah, Merry Christmas, one and all. But I know, so she's decorated her house already. God help us all. It's Extina. Sometime in a few weeks, I'm going to be forced to play the obligatory Christmas song on the show. Just the one. And come on, I mean, tell, you know, I'm not all Scroogey, you know, tell the listeners, you know what, I have Christmased up the Hellbound Books website, have I not?
You have, and I get so excited when I see our little demon guy with the Santa hat. It is not so festive. Yes.
Officially the countdown to Christmas now.
I know. I'm so excited. This really is the most wonderful time of the year. And
No, it isn't.
My house looks like it threw up Christmas, and I'm excited.
Your house looks like an explosion in a fucking tinsel factory. That's what your house looks like.
I love it. No, it's true too, and last year I didn't have enough tinsel, so like any time I saw it on sale after Christmas, I bought some. So now I have a whole bucket full of just tinsel, and I'm like, wow, I can like tinsel the whole house, I think, and I just might do that.
Why not?
I'm excited. I'm already playing Christmas music and. I can't get enough. I can't. And
I hate it. They started playing it in the stores, and I just hate it. It's just like,
oh my God, I get so excited. I do.
Stop it.
You know, there's only 23 more days. That's not very many, and it's going to go quickly.
And guess how much preparation I've done for Christmas. None.
Yeah, how much?
The sad thing is today. I refuse to discuss Christmas until December. And, of course, you know, so the 1st of December, the kids, so today I said, right, okay, we'll pop out when my son gets home from work because he's got a truck now. We'll go get our Christmas tree from the local Kroger. And we got on the fucking, haven't got it in. What? You know, how, why?
Aww.
Why have they not got our Christmas trees in? So we have to wait until next weekend now.
how are you going to put up a Christmas tree with all those animals anyway? I mean, you know, I've seen your idea of putting it in a little cage or something, and I think that would be smart.
Yes. we have sort of a kind of a high, like a couple of high antique tables, big solid tables, and back when we had our boxer dog back in England, we made the mistake of putting the tree at ground level, and he used to eat the ornaments. He just has to eat them. We've got a great table, and we put it on there, and you know they can't. It's difficult for them to reach. Although we've obviously got the two pups at the moment, which are going to have a field day.
Mm-hmm.
I am. Just working my butt off at the moment. I guess because everybody wants everything done by the end of the year, and I'm working on a big, I'll finish a ghostwriter project, which hopefully it will become how I want to finish tomorrow, because it's going to go back.
Yay.
And it's an erotic thriller, so I'm enjoying it. It's steamy. I did the first chunk of it, and I was told to tone it down a bit I'll just throw everything at it because it's easier to tone it down than to it's a bit porny, he said. but it's funny, I was just thinking as part of my research, believe it if you want, I've been looking in. don't mock. It's just some sort of dodgy BDSM website. So I found this great clip, and it's basically the premise, because the novel I'm writing, I can't give too much away. It's based around a sort of a game show, like the Bachelor sort of idea, but it's all naughtiness. Idea is just two friends. So again, they're probably actors, but whatever. Two friends, and they tie one up, and the other has to answer questions. If she question wrong, and a friend gets whipped.
Nice.
And it looks
nice.
Pretty real. I mean, they're absolutely whipping the shit out of this girl. I'm enjoying it. This is great.
Well,
I mean,
Sunday afternoon. Yeah.
I say, who does it at your house? Who doesn't love a bit of a quiz? You know, and it's funny the thing. They're doing all this, and I'm answering the questions. I was joining in. I got that one. I'm right, and there's a bit of mental arithmetic, some math questions, and this girl's crap at math questions. So they're giving her all these math questions. And here's a conundrum. Okay, one of the conundrums that happened on this show, whatever the hell it was, German, naturally, duh, you know. The girl answering the questions got a question wrong. So this girl getting punished was going to receive 25 lashes with the whip. Yeah.
Nice.
And the conundrum was that they said, they said to the girl answering the question, well, okay, here's the deal, right? If you either she takes 25 off this professional mistress woman who was thrashing the shit out of her, or you, the friend, can give her 10. But, you know, you've got to do it, you know.
Right.
But personally, I'd have jumped right in there. Yes. Yes, I will. And she got all bloody pissy old girly about it. Oh, can I do that? So she'd rather her friend get 25 lashes from the professional dom.
Wow.
Than give her 10 herself, you know. And that was just an interesting one. One of those moral dilemmas that I think most people face in their day-to-day lives.
sure, yeah. I mean, I know. I don't yet, but I would like to. I would like to face that in my day-to-day, working. But
give me the damn whip. Yes, please. I'll have a go at that.
Right.
It was well done. It was nice. It actually tied in with the book that I'm writing in so much, you know, the things that people will put themselves through. in the pursuit of hedonism, I guess, and pleasure, which was interesting. It was obviously it's not. Unless it's incredibly good special effects. And, of course, this is German porn, so I can't imagine the SFX budget is particularly high, to be honest. And it looks pretty real, and they are really, really hurting these people. And it's like, well, I presume they ever get paid for it, but who would
know?
Except you, who would get paid to have that done to them?
That we had to order another crop because the old one was pretty much falling apart. So we had to order. And we don't order one of those crappy ones from, like, you know, Adam and Eve or wherever.
Oh,
they're
just
buy. We actually
shit.
Order them. Yeah, mm-hmm. We order them right from, like, the tractor supply store. So, you know, I mean, these are, like, head steady, you know, really sturdy things. And,
You have to have the proper thing. I mean,
you
get them from the equestrian centres. That's always a good place. You get the real thing. But if you've managed to thrash the crap out of a real genuine one, you Jesus wet woman.
So
good
yeah,
Lord.
We're on the second one. Yeah. But
wow.
You know, I mean, it's fun. It's a lot of. So, yeah, moving on.
Oh, on the show this evening.
Yeah, we have one. We do have one. Let me make sure that I'm composed now. Okay, so I'm just going to say it, and then you're going to push the button, and we're going to go from there, okay? That's how we're going to do it, right?
Yes, mistress. Yes, Mistress Extina. That actually works, actually. In fact, I think I've got a character in one of my books that's called Mistress Extina.
It's
Extina, Extina Stern. That is right. She's actually, you made it as a character into one of my books. There you go. Fame at
really
last.
That's really cool. Yeah. I want that book signed. I think that would be a great book to have signed on myself, by the way. Tonight on our show, we have award-winning international author David M. Salkin.
Good evening.
Hello. Good evening. How are you, sir?
I am outstanding. I'm up way past my bedtime, but you promised me that this was going to be hilarious. So the opening, I've done a few shows, and I don't think I've ever heard such a huge band and thousands of people cheering. So it's pretty cool. Pretty cool start.
Well, we are an institution on the airwaves now. We've been around
256 shows. You said that was a lot.
I think that's more than Tony Bennett, to be honest with you. So So thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. I'll talk to anybody who will listen to me.
We like that. We like people like you. It's great. So whereabouts are you calling from, David?
I'm in New Jersey. I'm actually at the Jersey Shore in a little town called Manasquan, and I'm in a temporary residence while I am waiting until Christmas and then getting in the car, and the wife and I are heading south to start the next chapter of life in Florida.
Oh, nice.
Wow. What
nice,
part
nice,
of Florida
nice.
Are you going to?
We'll be in Southwest Florida near Sarasota.
Nice. I lived in I lived in St. Pete for a good amount of years, and then I lived in Ocala for a while. And I have to say, I grew up in upstate New York, and then we moved to Florida, which I guess you have to do that after you live in New York, so you could like thaw out for a while. And then when I was properly thawed out, I moved to Tennessee, and I love it here. I mean, you know, in Florida, everything is just hot all the time. So, you know, good luck.
Thank you. I like to fish and scuba dive, and so if it gets too hot, I'll go underwater. I'll be okay.
Yeah, you know, in the area, like Sarasota, that's beautiful over there. So, you know, and you have the water and, you know, of course, where I was living the last stretch in Florida there was just nothing but heat all the time. And, I know, I'm so excited right now because, and James, we're talking about, you know, it's getting close to, you know, Christmas time and, you know, we're in December and it's not cold yet here. I mean, today we are a little chilly, you know, it's nothing. And, you know, I look back on my year memories on, like, Facebook.
You broke up there. Can you hear me?
Hello? I think we lost Christina.
Yeah. Yeah, she staticked out there for a second.
Well, you know, since you're stuck with me. I'm sure she'll be back.
She's living in Tennessee. She's got to get the gerbil back on the treadmill to get the power up in the house again.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, it's maybe it's the donkey in the backyard's taken sick or something. But
are you in England?
No, I'm in Houston. Believe it or not. Obviously, originally from England. Yeah, this is a good old Houston accent. No, I've lived in Yorkshire, Northern England, for most of my life. I've been here just over 11 and a half years now.
I was in York years ago.
I used to live in York. Pudding. Love the place.
Yeah. The pudding was not all it was cracked up to be, but the city was beautiful.
Oh, I'd say something. If ever you're in Houston, my Yorkshire puddings are legendary. They really are. I was raised on the things. I know, and I'm passing that down to my children now, so they know how to make them as well. So
excellent.
It's kind of important. But hopefully, are you back again, Christina?
I am. I don't even know what happened.
I think you were sort of starting to bore us a little bit. So we'll get rid of it soon. We'll have a chat, but
I thought the show wasn't going well, so the host just left, you know?
Yeah.
You know, that is always a sign that things are not going well, is when actually, I've had enough of that. I'm going. Either that or she's... her box of wine's just run out, and she needs to go get another one. David is here to talk about his book, Blood from a Stone, which is one of many. I checked you out, Dave. You've been incredibly prolific.
Blood from a Stone was book number 15, and it's a thriller. It's a fun story because I liked the location, which is, I don't know if you remember, there was a TV show on for a little while. I think it was, I just drew a blank on the name, but in the show, True Detective, the first show takes place in the swamps of New Orleans, like the area down in Louisiana.
That was Matthew McConaughey?
It might have been. It was so long ago now.
Yeah, I know the one you mean. That was good. Yeah,
the setting is almost like a character. It was such a big part of the story. You know, that
I love that
sense of place. So in Blood from a Stone, it takes place in Harker's Island, which is, if you know the Carolinas, you've got the Outer Banks, and then south of the Outer Banks, you have Harker's Island, which is very remote. And for many years. From the 1500s up until about the 1950s, it was only accessible by boat. And so until the bridge was put in, you know, fairly modern era, the people that lived there were very isolated. And so when you go down south and you're used to hearing a southern accent, that's what we associate with, you know, South Carolina. But in Harker's Island, they speak High Tider, which in their vernacular would be Hoytoiter, because they really speak Elizabethan English, which is, you know, very unusual, obviously, in the United States, and linguistics experts from around the country, they go there to listen to some of the old timers who still speak this sort of very unusual dialect. And so that was kind of intriguing, and it made for an interesting place to stick a story. And I think it was fun.
Yeah,
it's a dark story with a sarcastic, wise-ass main character who is a sarcastic wise, that's sort of like the author.
Yeah, I was reading over your excerpt that you're going to read for us, and I chuckled. I did, and I love that. I love a little bit of humor, especially in something dark. You know, I think that it's a great way to kind of offset the darkness sometimes. I think it's one of my favorite things. It really is. But I love that when you make a town or, you know, it kind of the setting as important as that, because it just, I don't know, it makes it so real. I know that over the summer, I read, it was Joyland by Stephen King, and I just loved the town and the, you know, it, for me, that makes it sometimes, you know, if you can just see this little town and you can, you know, feel how hot it is in the summer. And, you know, I think that a lot of times the authors, they don't utilize that enough. I don't think, I think they really, they forget a dimension.
Mm-hmm. If you're reading, you're on a mental vacation, right? So if you have a strong sense of place and you can put the reader someplace else, then they really are on vacation. You know, they are wherever the story's taking place, and it gets them out of the house while they're sitting in their house.
Definitely. I'm a big fan. But I want to hear more. Do you have we already discussed that you did. Are you ready to read the excerpt for us?
Yeah, and I'll kind of skim and kind of pick through the chapter, because this is chapter 4. It gives you sort of a sense of the main character a little bit, and it's towards the beginning of the story, so it's not really giving anything away. So our main character is a guy named Corey Walker, who was a Delta operator, which is Special Forces, and he gets blown up in his last tour and comes back to the U.S., and after he leaves the VA system, he's doing physical therapy, where he falls in love with his physical therapist, and he's relentlessly asking her out, but she won't go out with him. You know, she's not going to date a patient. And then as he's finishing up, he finally convinces her to go out with him. So that's the excerpt that I'm going to read, and it begins the mayhem that starts the story. So jumping into the chapter a little bit and skipping through, it says, you know, figuring she knew my military background and still agreed to go out with me, I decided to wear my dress uniform. It was the first time I put it on since I'd come home, and I really was not supposed to be wearing it since I was now out of the unit and this wasn't a parade or anything. But what the heck? I was trying to impress a beautiful woman, and that called for special tactics. The truth was, I looked way better in my uniform than in street clothes. With multiple dings and dents in my face from jagged pieces of hot metal, rocks, and a few fists, I had a face meant for a Green Beret or a brown bag. And after 9 years in the Rangers, that Special Forces, then Delta, I had acquired a chest full of ribbons, including a silver star, which is how the government says, wow, you didn't get killed, and two bronze stars and V devices for valor. I had also recently received my second Purple Heart, which is the reason I was no longer in the Special Forces. So anyway, I picked up my date, who was obviously impressed with my uniform and chest full of ribbons, or maybe it was the flowers. I don't know. Who can ever figure women? We were going to dinner out near her house, which was about 30 minutes from me, so she picked the restaurant. The place was just right, dark and cozy, but not outrageously expensive. My kind of woman. It was a three-hour dinner, and it seemed like 5 minutes. By the time we'd finished dinner, we'd also finished two bottles of good wine and had both concluded this was going pretty well. We decided to go out for a drink. Bad idea. More on that in a minute. So Amanda wasn't much of a parter. She had a boyfriend for several years, and they'd broken up recently. And while she did know the great restaurant, she was at a loss for a cool bar, so we just strolled around downtown and picked one, hence the problem. A guy in uniform can walk into several types of bars. One type is where they see your uniform and a chest full of ribbons, and you don't pay for a drink all night. I love those bars. Another type of bar is full of mostly men who look like they arrived via swamp boat instead of a car and had never served in the military. We had walked into that kind of bar. So Amanda took a quick look around and said, maybe we should go somewhere else. Smart lady. But I was thinking, yeah, like one beer here, then to your place. So being in uniform, which always increased the amount of testosterone in the bloodstream, I said, we'll stay for one beer. It'll be fine. Big mistake. We walked over to the ancient wooden bar, which is fairly abused looking. Some might say it had character. And they ordered us two Sam Adams. This was not being cheap. This was because beer came in bottles that were freshly opened, and there was no way I was drinking from mugs in that place. This coming from a guy who once drank blood from the neck of a goat to get some liquid while trying to avoid dying of thirst. So I ordered the beers, gave the bartender a bigger than normal tip just to prove I wasn't an asshole, and leaned with my back against the bar to face my gorgeous date. We might have had just one beer and been out of there. We might have ended up back at her place, making passionate love until the sun came up. There were all kinds of possibilities. But that's not what actually happened. We were standing there, totally minding our own business, when things went south. Getting injured and spending a few months home doing rehab had just about turned me back into a human being, and being on a date with Amanda had managed to help me turn off my constant battle space, head on a swivel, full amp mode. Then this guy showed up. This character looked like something out of a B-horror movie. He stepped right between me and Amanda and leaned over real close to her. When G.I. Joe goes back overseas, why don't you give me a call? I could have lived with that, really. I was cool with being called G.I. Joe. But then several loud laughs encouraged him. Put his arm around her, dangled his hand over her breast, and smiled, showing the nastiest set of choppers I'd seen since Afghanistan. I mean, seriously, even the moose would brush their teeth if they had a toothbrush. Amanda's face showed absolute horror. You should go back to your friends now, I said calmly. What are you going to do about it, soldier boy? He sneered and squeezed her breast. I reached for the man's throat and squeezed his trachea hard enough to cause him to immediately release Amanda. His eyes bulged, his face went red, then a nice shade of purple, as he automatically went to his tippy toes. He started doing what we in Ranger School call the happy dance. That's when your arms and legs start moving around searching for oxygen, and you look like a lot like the cartoons of Snoopy dancing. Amanda put her hand over her mouth, managed not to scream. I whispered into the dirtbag's ear that we'd be leaving now, and you'd better just find a seat somewhere. That actually was my plan, to choke him out and leave, and by the time he came to, we'd be in the car heading to her house for a 7-hour kiss goodnight. Now, in the movies, when a guy in a bar hits another guy in a bar over the head with a bottle, the bottle breaks harmlessly and no one gets cut. That's Hollywood. In real life, when this guy's buddy hit me, the bottom of the bottle felt like a baseball bat, and it did not break. The only thing that broke was my head. I saw little stars, and the world started going black. Fortunately for me, the floor broke my fall. Equally fortunate was that two guys quickly jumped on me and pulled me over onto my back to make sure I would stay awake for the beating of my life. I had just about nodded out when they started punching me back awake. The punches to my face woke me back up, or maybe it was the sound of my nose breaking. The chokehold on the guy at the bar had been well thought out and carefully executed so as not to inflict lethal force. When the two guys on top of me began trying their best to break my face open, a little switch inside my brain slipped, and I no longer had to think about anything. First Sergeant Walker had arrived. I remember Amanda screaming. I couldn't see her, but I hoped she wasn't being raped or killed. She was really screaming bloody murder, as they say. I think it was my bloody murder she was screaming about. I remember the sound of the first goon's neck snapping. I had managed to work my arms around his head, and I broke it on autopilot. The second guy, I remembered using the blade side of my hand to hit his throat as many times as I could. I still had grizzly atoms laying across my legs, and I couldn't move. It's funny the stuff that a person thinks about at the weirdest times. Chopping away at this guy's throat, I was thinking, all these motherfuckers are wearing flannel. I know, bizarre, but this bar was right out of Deliverance. About the time I was pushing Grizzly off my legs and Flannel Boy was gurgling and dying next to him, the original asshole who had started this whole disaster pulled out a big old hunting knife. That was really lucky. He moved toward me across the bar as I was getting to my feet. I could only see him out of my right eye, my left having been closed by Grizzly before I'd sent him to the Happy Hunting Lodge in the sky. The guy with the knife was holding it, blade pointing down in his fist, meaning he was going to have to raise his arm and go for an overhand strike. If I had a dollar for every time I had to defend myself against the rubber version of a knife during hand-to-hand combat schools in Delta, I'd have that fishing boat. So the wild man comes across the bar with his knife, and I knew it sounded stupid, but I'm thinking, holy shit, he's wearing flannel too. And he came at me and raised the knife like I knew he would, and I kicked him in the you-know-what, and with a quick wrist lock, took the knife and sent it up into the solar plexus right through his heart. We both went tumbling to the floor at that point, me out of complete exhaustion and a serious ass-whooping, and him out of, well, being dead. It was at this moment, when I was flat on my back, trying really hard to stay conscious, that I saw every cop in town flying into the bar. I figured one beat down was enough for the day, so I feigned death. I didn't have to act very much. I felt fairly dead. Then I heard screaming and remembered I had the responsibility, so I tried to get back up. That action was met with a nightstick being pushed into my chest and a stern, "Don't you fucking move," from a very tall policeman. I collapsed back to the floor and tried to wink at Amanda. She was being comforted by a female police officer who was slowly leading her in my direction at Amanda's agitated insistence. At that point, I vomited blood all over myself, my nose having been broken and lots of blood having gone down my throat into my stomach, and my stomach apparently didn't want it there. That was enough for the cop who was ready to thump me to call for an ambulance. He told me he'd cuff me in front instead of behind if I promised not to cause any trouble, and I politely passed out. So that's the opening bar fight, and you get a little sense of Corey's sarcasm, but the action in the bar fight kind of lets you know, like, you know, what kind of person he is in terms of his ability to defend himself, and his relationship with Amanda sort of blossoms after he comes out of the hospital.
I love that. So it blossoms when he comes to, I'm thinking she wants to, you know, find the nearest exit. But that's great. I love that.
Yeah, she actually takes him home and nurses him back to health with his big purple face. Uh-huh. And they end up she's a good girl. So they end up heading down south to Parker's Island, where he eventually buys his dream house, this beach house. And in the process of building a wine cellar down in the basement, he stumbles across a diary in the crawl space. And the diary belonged to a girl who had lived on Harker's Island a couple of decades ago. And she had been raped and murdered on Harker's Island. It was the only bad thing that ever happened on this tiny little island, and like as far back as anybody can remember. And when her mother had found out the news about her daughter being killed, she hung herself. So it was the mother and the daughter both died. And the guy who owned the house, he eventually sells it, and, you know, the house changes hands a few times. But nobody else had ever dug around in the basement. Nobody else had ever found this diary. And as Corey starts reading through it, he realizes that pretty good chance the wrong guy is sitting in jail for the rape and murder. And the person who owned the house, this guy whose name is Earl Stone, and that's where the title comes from, Blood from a Stone. Earl Stone's probably going to be the next president of the United States until Corey reads the diary and decides he doesn't want this guy to be the president of the United States. He wants this guy to probably go to jail. So it's dark, obviously, because you're dealing with the rape and murder of a young girl. So, I mean, that's about as horrible as it gets. But the henchmen from Earl Stone, who are trying to prevent Corey from doing anything with his diary that could jeopardize his political career, you've got, you know, the criminal element, and it's gritty and dark, but Corey keeps things with a little comic relief because he's sarcastic and hilarious.
I so enjoy that reading, and I have to say you read it really well too. You could totally narrate this. I would listen to you read. You know, I was just going to let you keep going too. If you hadn't stopped, I was just going to let you keep going. I was enjoying.
Yeah,
that
I
so
was
much.
Really I was really enjoying that. I was sad when you stopped. To be honest.
I know. And
you know, it's funny.
So,
I have a few of my books are on audio. And I've had people say to me, well, as the author, why don't you read your own books? And I was going to do it once. And then I realized what a huge undertaking it is. You're going to read 350 pages? No way.
Yeah, it is a difficult one, yeah.
But I have to say, David, when you go to make out the signed copy, that's X-T-I-N-A.
Oh, okay.
She's a terrible, terrible person. You really are. Really are.
No, that was so good. I was enjoying that so much. What are you working on now?
So the sequel for this is sort of kind of in a rough draft, almost done. I'm going to make some pretty big changes. So it'll be another couple of months, and I'm in the process of moving, and there's a lot going on in my personal life right now, just getting to Florida. So it won't get touched for a little bit yet, but the main character I really liked, and you know, I had done a series called The Team, which was six books that I did for Post Hill Press. And that was a military espionage thriller series. And I had built this little team of characters and liked them all. And it's, you know, and when you kind of finish the series, it's like you've lost your friends, you know. So you have to go out and start over again. And you don't always, you know, love your main character. But I really, really like Corey because, I created a character that he has the same interests as I do. He's a chef and he's a wine lover. And, you know, I'm not a military badass, but this guy is. But he does have my sense of humor and my sort of warped view on life. And I could see more adventures with him. So I think I told you early, I'm a scuba diver. And in the sequel, it's sort of a nor'easter blows through South Jersey, and a kid on the beach walking around discovers a gold goblet encrusted with jewels, including a giant pink diamond. And there had been a Spanish galleon that was lost in a storm back in the 1500s, and this guy has found it. And so that story is you know, treasure attracts bad guys. You know, people are greedy. Mm. So at that point, Corey, in the next book, he has become a private detective because he basically, because he needed a job, he'd come out of the service and didn't know what he wanted to do. And so he gets involved in the story that way. So, you know, it, again, a totally different storyline, nothing to do with it, but I like the main character, and so I think I could keep him around. On my webpage, there's a blog says, "What would Corey do?" And all it is recipes and wine pairings, which I know sounds totally goofy for an author, but I like to cook, so I like to eat. So,
yeah.
You know, it's just,
I like that idea. That's a good idea.
Yeah, there's mentions of food in the book, so he's always cooking in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think that we could see Corey on the big screen someday. I mean, it did definitely seem like a character who was
okay. So who would play him? Who would play Corey on the big screen? Do you think?
So you know, it's funny when I first started writing, when I did the team series, I actually had an entertainment lawyer just call me out of the blue and ask me if the series had been optioned yet, and I was like, nope, we're talking. So there's been a couple of times when I thought there might be film potential for a couple of different books, and I was asked at one point by somebody, you know, in the film, you know, world, so who do you see as the main character? So I'm like, I'm just the author. I don't know Hollywood. That's for you guys. And they're like, oh no. You have to tell us, which was eye-opening because I didn't realize that the Hollywood folks expect the writer to tell them who to cast. Or, you know, because if you say to somebody, well, I think it should be Brad Pitt, even if Brad Pitt's not in the budget or he's not available, they know the body type, right? They know what he looks like. They know what he sounds like. They know, you know, so they know that they know the type of actor that you want. And so as I've written more books, sometimes now when I'm at the very beginning starting a project, I'll actually look on IMBD and go through different Hollywood actors and just pick people to say, okay, you know, I think, you know, this might be good. Like John Bernthal might have been like the sort of look for this guy because I didn't want anybody too pretty. You know, I wanted a guy that was more like a man's man whose nose may have been busted a couple times and, you know, a couple of scars and whatever. this is a tough guy. This is a guy who was a, you know, sergeant first class, and, you know, 15, 20 years in the military, lots of combat, lots of injuries. So he doesn't necessarily have to be the guy that walks in the room and all the girls go swooning because he's so handsome. But there's something about him that you like because he is very, you know, very self-confident, obviously, can take care of himself, likes to cook, likes to drink, likes to have a good time. So, I don't know. You could tell me who you see in Hollywood that fits the bill, but I thought Bernthal, who played, what was the name of that series he did on cable for a while? You know, the Avenger or something like that? I forget what the...
He's the guy from, wasn't he in The Walking Dead? Isn't that The Walking Dead guy? He was Shane, right? Anybody know? Hello?
I never watched it.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that's him because I just looked him up, and I'm pretty sure that's him. But, yeah, I can't remember what he did after that. But I'm trying to look real quick here. But, no, I think that would be a good choice. I really like him as an actor. You know, it's funny being a reader as well. When I pick up a book, I immediately start casting the roles that I'm reading about. I mean, that's just, I guess, how my brain works is that I like to, you know, I like to see it happening. And if I can cast the role, of course, you know, whatever female lead, that's always me. But, you know, I got to cast the leading man. Yeah, and I love that you said that, you know, you put in the cooking and the wine and stuff because those are, you know, things that you enjoy. And I think that, you know, when I used to read when I was younger, I don't think I realized how much of ourselves that is placed in the books and the things that we write, how much, you know, leaks out. And it's very fun, I think, now. Whenever I read a book, I'm like, I wonder, you know, is this real? I wonder if this is, you know, part of, you know, who the author is and stuff like that. It's really a fun way to kind of get into their head and figure out, you know, what they're all about. So I, you know, what do you enjoy cooking? Like, what is your, you know, your favorite dish to cook?
anything. I like to experiment, and I would never be a good baker because I don't measure anything. So I think even when people like say, oh, can you give me the recipe? I always in my head I'm like, well, I can tell you what's in it, but there's no recipe. It's like, you know, the quantities are going to be however you make it, but I can tell you what's in it. So
right.
I mean, it's I would say contemporary American cuisine with some Italian and French background. How's that for an answer?
I like it.
But I make it look pretty. I mean, that's, you know, it's got to look nice on the plate.
We were watching. I am not one for the cooking shows, but the boyfriend apparently is. And we were, I don't even know how it got turned to some kind of cooking show last night. And we ended up, and an hour and a half later, we're still watching this cooking show. And I was amazed at the things that they were cooking, and I kept thinking the judges who you know judge these shows, how are they not 600 pounds? Like for real, like that's all they do is like taste the food and eat the food, and I'm like, I'm kind of jealous right now. These things look amazing, but
and that's hilarious. My friend Jeff, he also likes to cook, and he's a formally trained sommelier. And so we'll get together and we'll make these epic meals with, you know, all kinds of wine pairings. And when we get so excited cooking and eating and drinking, we always say to each other, how is it that we don't weigh 300 pounds? We love to do this.
yeah, definitely.
You
can't
do it every day, I think, is the key.
Oh, every single thing I saw on the cooking thing there. And, you know, this is a funny thing, too. The names of the foods and the you know ingredients, I was like, are they making this stuff up? I think they're speaking a different language. I don't know what they're saying, but I need some of whatever it is. That's all I do know. But it was and you know I enjoy cooking, I guess, for my family. I never thought I did. But it is rewarding when your family sits down and eats and they all like it. So yeah, but that's
yeah, it keeps everybody in the same table for a while, right? You can all have some family time.
Yeah. I don't think I'm very creative when it comes to cooking, but I do have a couple of things I can whip together and they taste really amazing. But yeah,
you see, it's always back to whipping with you, isn't it, Xtina? You've got a one-track mind, woman.
There?
You really have. I've no idea. I hate to think.
Woo, I told you about that crop. Okay, anyway, whipping crops. Oh, where are we at? I don't even know anymore.
Moving
cooking,
on.
That's where we were.
Mm.
Yes. But, yeah, you definitely. I'm gonna have to check out the website now. I think that Corey could steer us into, you know, what would be a good wine for, you know, whatever we were eating
there's
that night.
Yeah, there's definitely some wine pairings there too. Yeah, in the opening of the book, he's talking about how he ended up cooking because, you know, he's always in the field, and they're always issued MREs, which in the service, you know, the nicknames for those things are like, you know, meals rarely edible. Meals rejected by Ethiopians. These are not good tasting packets. So guys who are usually deployed, they'll either eat the indigenous food and end up with dysentery, or they'll try to figure out ways to spruce up the MREs with, you know, local products or whatever. So that's how Corey started cooking and ended up just, you know, enjoying it. So in real life, I just like to eat.
You know, who really doesn't? I have to say, this is a totally different topic here. I had, you know, we went, how many weeks has it been now, James? But and we did not mention that awful C word. But I had the virus months and months ago, and I lost all sense of taste. I mean, all sense of taste, which was really weird. You know, when I heard about people talking about it before, you know, they lose their sense of taste, I was like, well, you know, it's always a little muted when you get sick. So, you know, no big deal, whatever. But no, this is like nothing. You were pushing. Yeah, it was so odd. And then after I got done being sick, it, you know, slowly started coming back. And I thought it was okay. But within like the last month or so, I've noticed that my tastes are just wrong. They're just off. And it's weird. And I Googled it because I'm like, I think I'm going crazy. I think that this is something, you know, this, and it was a real thing. And it's got a name and everything, where your taste buds or whatever are just, they're kind of sick or something. They're not right.
Well, you have to retrain your synapses in your brain. It's like you have to have a lemon and look at the lemon and say to yourself, this is a lemon, and then lick a lemon and taste sour lemon and go, okay, that's what that tastes like. But you have to do it like with a lemon, with salt, with pepper, and really practice knowing what these things are supposed to smell and taste like, and kind of retrain your brain after you come back from that.
The weirdest part for me is that the things that I'm tasting that taste totally like they're not supposed to, it's always really bad taste. Like one night, water that, you know, water does not have a taste, really. It tasted like fish. I know that's just disgusting.
You're not supposed to get your water out of the fish tank. I mean, that's just a bad idea.
I know. And sometimes things taste like really like mildew. Like I get this really strong mildewy.
I've just played devil's advocate here. Could it just be that your cooking is awful?
No, it's absolutely not. But the weird, you know, and I've said, you know, before, I say to the boyfriend all the time, I'm like, you know, how come, you know, I can't eat this lemon and it tastes like banana pudding? I'm like, how come they're not good flavors? It's always like these awful flavors that I'm tasting. And I have to say, it made Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving meal just kind of sad. You know, I take, you know, the stuffing.
How long has that been going on?
The weirdness may be about a month, but I mean, I had the virus back in like August, I think. So I don't know. It's just really, really, yeah. I had a nurse friend and she was talking about, therapy, like some kind of taste therapy. I'm like, what would that be? Anyway, I'm hoping that eventually it comes back. I will have to say it's, you know, it's good for the diet, because if you can't taste like amazing things, you're like, yeah, I'm done. I'm you know, that's good for me.
Right.
So, but yeah,
well, I hope it comes back
really
for
odd. Me too. Thank you. I don't even know how we got on that weird topic there, but and I had to share with somebody, so I guess I was sharing with the airwaves there. But I was going to say we'll be thinking about you as you prepare to move to Florida, and you know, just make sure to pack a lot of shorts and flip flops and.
Yeah, we're taking what's going to fit into two cars, and we're burning our ships in the harbor, so that there's no going back. We're just we're traveling very light, and we'll just start over when we get down there.
It's exciting. A move like that is always exciting. But
I'm gonna start a new career too when I go down there, because I don't write full time. If I write full time, I make enough money to live in a box on the street and be homeless. So I'm going to go into real estate and help my friends who are still living in New Jersey, help them escape the People's Republic of New Jersey and go down to Florida too. So all my friends will be my clients once I get down there.
It sounds exciting. I think we're getting close to being out of time for our show, David, but I've had such a great time with you. You have to promise that you're going to come back and see us.
Of course, yeah, absolutely.
Yay,
and all of my books are thrillers, except for Battle Scars, which if somebody's listening and they said, well, what should I read first? I would always tell everybody, read Battle Scars, because you can read it in 3 hours, but you'll think about it for a week, I promise you. That's the only thing that really was a serious story that I wanted to write, and I actually wrote the screenplay for it, which I'm hoping one day will be on a big screen. But the rest of them, you know, you've got your options of I write horror, I write crime, and military espionage is by far the most of the books that I've written. And but they're all, you know, designed to keep you up past bedtime, which is hopefully, you know, you're turning pages and you just got to get to the end. And then when you get to the end, you want to read another one. So that's the goal.
Definitely. And give us a shout out real quick of where we can find you online.
So davidmsalkin.com. It's SALKIN. And if you go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, your favorite bookstores, sometimes I'm on the shelf next to J.D. Salinger, or sometimes you got to ask them to order it for you. But most of the books are on Kindle as well, and some of them are on Audible, so you can listen while you're driving. And that's it. Thanks for having me on tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, David.
Pleasure.
Yes, I will definitely be stalking you to come back on the show real soon.
I always wanted my very own stalker. Thank you.
Thank you, David, and have a Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah, Merry,
thanks so much.
All of that, and Happy Easter as well. So, and we will speak to you again very soon. Cheers, David.
Awesome. Thanks, Ed.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
That was...
Well, Ty, yeah, we didn't even have a break because I didn't want to, it was just all going really well, and that was brilliant. So apologize to our sponsor for that one. Oh, I think Xtina's gone home anyway. So it is time to say goodnight, Xtina. Goodnight, Xtina.
Here's my story, it's sad but true. About a girl that I once knew. She took my love, then ran around with every single guy in town.
Hey, hey, whoa. Away from a run around to a whoa.